Streams of giggles and chatter were flowing from little Daisy's bedroom. Her mother, Carol, was delighted to hear her six-year-old settling in so well. There had been so much change over the last few weeks. New city, new school, new friends, and most of all, a new house. It really wasn't an ideal situation, but they would make it work. And from the sweet string of laughter emitting from her daughter's room, Carol knew this was, in fact, the right move. Carol peeped around the corner to spy on her baby girl sitting around a tiny wooden table, enjoying a tea party with a bizarre collection of stuffed animals. Carol could watch her all day. Silently, she stood in the hall, listening to Daisy's sweet conversations with her well-loved toys. "Was that one lump of sugar or four, Mr. Pooh Bear? Would you like a carrot with your tea, Mrs. Hopper? Chocolate milk for you, Bramble." There was something so endearing about watching her tiny daughter pretend to be so grown up and refined. Compelled to join in with the fun, Carol entered the room and took the last empty seat. "Is there room for one more, Miss Daisy?" "Oh, of course, Mama, but you can't sit there."
"Oh," Carol questioned as she dutifully rose.
"That's Esty's seat, Mama," Daisy retorted, as though it was the most obvious thing in the world.
"Esty? Who's Esty?"
"My friend."
"One of your toys?" Carol asked quizzically.
"No, Mama, she's a little girl."
"Oh, I see." Carol was surprised, but not shocked that Daisy had conjured up an imaginary friend. There had been so much upheaval recently. It was only natural that she would want a constant friend, one who she wouldn't have to move away from.
"Well, it is lovely to meet you, Esty," Carol said to the empty chair. "Where do you live?"
"She lives outside," Daisy responded.
"Oh, really? That must be very chilly."
"Not really. She lives under the grass."
"Under the grass? Ooh, so dirty and icky, full of spiders and worms."
"Mama, it's not nice to say that about someone's home."
Daisy looked deeply embarrassed by her mother's judgment, and Carol was equal parts proud of her parenting and surprised at her sudden chastisement. "No, you're right, sweetheart. That wasn't very nice of me. I'm sorry, Esty." As Carol looked around the tired and warm room that she had tried to make cheerful for her daughter, all she could think was, "Who am I to judge?"
"What does Esty like to do?"
"Well, she likes to sing and she tells me stories at bedtime and she never leaves me when I sleep. She watches over me all night."
"Well, that's really lovely, sweetheart. She sounds like a good friend. What does she look like?"
With this question, Daisy's face clouded over and her brow furrowed deep into her forehead.
"Well, Mama, she wears a lavender dress, black shoes, and she has wiry hair."
Daisy was tentative, careful, suddenly unlike herself. "Does she have brown eyes like you?"
"Not really."
"What do you mean, not really?"
"Well, you know how you always tell me that what people look like on the outside doesn't really matter? What really matters is how they act?"
"Yeah, that's true. Outsides don't matter." Although Carol was sure she was giving positive parental advice, she wasn't comfortable with where this conversation was leading.
"Well, I know that's true because Esty looks a little different, but she is a really good friend."
"Well, that's all that really matters. But just out of curiosity, what does she look like?" Daisy walked over to her mother and sat on her lap, drew herself close to her ear and whispered,
"Well, she's small like me, but she's got an old wrinkly skin like a grandma face, dark red eyes and black sharp teeth, and thin, wispy white hair. At first, I was scared of her, but she's here all the time and talks so sweet to me. She watches over me and always says that I'm going to live with her under the grass soon, too."
"What?" Carol was horrified. This was not some sweet imaginary friend. What do you mean you're going to live under the grass with her?
She says, once you're gone, I'll be with her.
But baby, I'm not going anywhere.
That's not what Esty says. But it's okay, Mama. She's got plenty of friends with her under the grass. And one of them is coming for you, too.
Friends, it's Becca. For the past 3 years, the West London Witch team have been dedicated to bringing you the best supernatural stories at the highest studio quality. And by team, I mean me and my buddy Danny. We do this work totally for free because we love it. We're proud of our content and appreciate the wonderful interactions we get to have with storytellers and listeners just like yourself. If you're enjoying the West London Witch, maybe consider joining our Patreon. It's a way to further engage with us and show your support for Two Creatives. If you're in a position to spare enough each month for us to grab a cup of coffee in between edits or add to the piggy bank for a new microphone, we would love to see you in our Patreon community. But I know times are tough, so if you're not in a position to join Patreon right now, that's okay. We aren't going anywhere. Head on over to patreon.com/The West London Witch. For as little as £1, $1, €1 a month, you can gain full access to our coven, a space where we share behind-the-scenes stories, dive deeper into each episode, answer your questions, and have special little treats to thank you for sharing your love and kindness with your favorite little witch. Hello and welcome to episode 53 of The West London Witch, a podcast where we share stories about those moments where we find ourselves very much not alone. All children play make-believe and have imaginary friends. But what happens when these friends start to bleed into the real world and go from being childhood companions to family nightmares? Today, our storyteller Layla shares with us her own family's experience with what they thought was just an imaginary being. By the end of the episode, you can decide for yourself if this spirit was born out of friendship or malice. I'm Rebecca Strazina, and this is The West London Witch, episode 53, Friend or Foe.
Okay, so it all started when I was around like 3 years old. I had an imaginary friend like we all do. His name was Steve. And my mom would always like see us play. She'd always like ask me what Steve and I were doing. And I would just be like, no, like don't talk to me right now. Like Steve doesn't want to talk to you. And she'd be like, okay. And she just thought out I was just being like a kid, you know. And I don't remember exactly like these moments because I was so like little, but basically my mom would tell me that I would always play with Steve.
Our story begins with a young Layla living with her family in Ecuador, just a regular kid with an imaginary friend. In 2007, when Layla was six, her mom, dad, and older sister moved from their native Ecuador to the sun-bleached shores of Miami Beach.
And my mom ends up getting pregnant with my little sister in 2009. And when she gets pregnant, these like stuff started happening. Basically, there was things that were being like misplaced, you could say. And like, for example, one one time my sister and I, we went to the bay that was very close to our house. And I remember perfectly that my big sister placed the camera that we took to the bay in the table, like in her dining table. I remember we were telling my mom, like, oh, we saw this huge fish in the bay. And my mom was like, oh, let me see. Did you take pictures? And we're like, yeah, it's in the camera. So when we go get the camera, it's like nowhere to be found. Like the camera's gone.
The girls both clearly remember setting the camera on the dining room table. But like magic, it had disappeared. Their mother was quite upset, as it was the family's only camera.
And like to this day, we have no idea where that camera went. And we both are very sure that we brought it back to the house and, you know, it was left on the table.
2 weeks after the missing camera incident, the family moved house. Not even in the packing and unpacking process was the camera ever discovered. To this day, it is still missing.
And when we moved to this new apartment, which was basically like the same like building complex, but just like the building right next door. When we moved there, same things would happen. Like we would lose things, but this time, instead of just completely losing them, they would be like placed in a place where we never were near, like imperfectly. For example, my little sister had a party coming up and my mom bought her these new shoes and we knew that they were on top of this closet. I remember my mom was like, oh, can you get the shoes that are on top of the closet? And every day we would see them because it was like a month that she bought those shoes and we passed by the closet every day. And so I tell her like, mom, they're not here. Like, where did you put them? And she was like, they're there. You never know how to look for things. Like it's under your nose. And I'm like, oh, come on. Like it's really not there. And so I asked my dad to help me find them and he can't find it either. And my mom's like, you guys don't know how to do anything. Let me go get them. And I remember perfectly that they were on the right side on the top of the closet in the shoebox. And my mom didn't find it either. And she was like, what? This is so weird. My sister ended up having to wear like random shoes for the party. And then like 3 weeks after, I remember I was like grabbing something from the closet and I see the shoebox and it's in the same exact place, but on the other side. So on the left side of the closet. And instead of the shoes being inside of the box, they were like placed right outside of the box, like perfectly, like on display, basically. And I tell my mom and I'm freaking out and I'm like, oh my God, mom, look, they're here. Like they just appeared. Like I didn't see them yesterday, but they're here now.
The family was confused. They really all had looked for those shoes. And as we all know, if even your mom can't find something, then it is definitely lost. But the activity in the home was just beginning, and things were about to take a very dark turn.
I remember that night, my mom, like she went to sleep, and she said that she felt like something was watching her, like on her bedside. And she said that she would just like not open her eyes, but she would just like start cursing at whatever was there. And she'd be like, oh, don't bother me, leave me alone, you know, go away. She would tell us like the next day, like, oh, I feel like somebody was watching me. And she felt like it was watching her for hours and hours and that it would like disturb her peace, basically. And it happened frequently after that day. It would happen like every other day or every day. And like sometimes we would just wake up and my mom was just like telling something to leave her alone.
The girls were concerned for their mother, but their dad put up a strong front. He told them not to worry. Nothing was going on here. It's all just in your imagination. He didn't want to feed his wife or his daughter's fears. But it wouldn't be long before he was soon made to believe and address the situation.
I remember one day he was standing where my mom would feel like this, you know, figure was like staring at her. And he got pushed, like he got pushed really hard. And from that day on, he was just going, oh, no. It's real. Your feeling's real. Like when he got pushed, he was like, oh my God, I just got pushed like really hard. And this is the place where your mom's always yelling at, you know, that's no coincidence.
It was clear to the family that whatever was in their home had the potential to be dark and dangerous. Moving shoes is one thing, but watching their mother sleep and pushing their father were a whole new league of terrifying. Things were escalating quickly and for no apparent reason.
I remember like me being like scared, obviously, because I'd never experienced something like that. And I remember my mom started to leave me like by myself at the house. And I was like around 10 years old now. And my mom would be like, oh, I'll be back. I'm just going to go get groceries. And she would take like no longer than an hour. And I remember like, it would be like 40 minutes in and I would hear like someone opening the door and like being like, oh, like say my name. My mom calls me Leili, which is like my nickname that my family calls me. And I would hear someone open the door and being like, Leili. And so I would go outside to see my mom, which is what I thought I was hearing. And it was nobody. And I would call my mom and be like, hey, are you in the house? Like, I don't see you. And she's like, no, I'm walking there. I'll be there in like 10 minutes. And I'm like, no, there's no way. Like, you need to get here like in way less than 10 minutes because someone just said my name. Like, I just heard the door open and someone just said my name.
This became a reoccurring event. Leila was terrified. Something was mimicking her mom and calling her to them. But like any good mother, her mom tried to placate her daughter. Layla's mom told her there was nothing to be scared of. It was just her spirit, so excited to get home to her daughter that it had rushed to the house before her body could get there. It was a sweet notion, and as much as Leila didn't quite understand it and wasn't totally convinced it was true, she liked that theory a whole lot better than the alternatives.
Like, at first, I thought it was the house that we were in because, you know, it just started happening out of nowhere. And I remember that that building, they were going to renew it. So they were like kicking everybody out. So we had to move to a new place. And I was really excited because I was like, okay, I won't hear these voices anymore. I won't see any crazy stuff or anything being misplaced. I remember we moved. And the first night that we moved, I got sleep paralysis. And I never in my life, I didn't even know what it was until like it happened to me. And I remember like falling asleep. And then it was like me coming out of my body and I could see myself sleep. And I could see a little figure standing next to me beside my bed, just like what my mom would practically feel.
Oddly enough, Leila wasn't scared. In fact, the sight of a child made her feel like whatever this energy was actually just mischievous, impish and spirited even.
I felt like he was just playful. For example, there was times that when things would get misplaced and we would be like, oh, he's just messing with us.
Sure, Steve could have just been playing practical jokes on the family. But that didn't explain the darker activity they had experienced. And once again, his menacing side was about to reveal itself.
I used to wear glasses. And I remember that we were eating and somebody knocked on the door and it was like an Amazon delivery. And it was like some sunglasses that my dad bought for himself. And I remember taking off my like glasses, my seeing glasses, and putting them on the table where everybody was eating. And I like did a runway show and I was just like, you know, flaunting the sunglasses like as a joke. I remember when I put the glasses back in the case, like with any glasses, I tried to grab my glasses and they were not on the table anymore. And I couldn't see from afar. I was like, who's messing with me? Who grabbed my glasses that I just put on the table? And then everybody was like, what do you mean? You just left them there. I'm like, yeah, I know exactly. But where are they?
Leila went days without her glasses. And as she was totally dependent on them to see, she felt that this prank had gone too far. It wasn't until several days later that the glasses appeared in her little sister's closet, as though they had been there all along.
The only people that the spirit was, you know, grabbing our attention was just my mom and I. And like my big sister, she didn't experience anything and she slept in the same room as me. There was one day that I was a little scared at this point because a lot of things were happening. And my sister would come home from work at like around 11:30 midnight. And I remember one day, it was like around 12:30, my sister wasn't home still. And I was like, whatever, I'm just going to turn off the TV. I'm going to go to sleep right now. And my bed was facing the door of my room. So I could see like the hallway. I don't know why I decided to look at through that crack of the door. And all of a sudden, the door swings open like fully, like, and it like hits the wall, like, the other side of the wall. And I remember like standing up and like being like telling my sister like, hey, like are you okay? Like me thinking she's coming home drunk, you know, like, you know, she's so silly just opening the door that hard. And it wasn't that. She wasn't home. And I remember like trying to go into my parents' room and my parents' door was like locked. And I was like, oh my God, what just happened? So I call my sister and I'm like, hey, where are you? And she's like, oh, I'm 10 minutes away.
This activity persisted for years and just became the family's norm. But in 2014, once again, things took a turn. The three sisters all shared a bedroom. But since Layla's older and younger sister had decided to take a trip to Ecuador, Layla got to have the room all to herself. Or at least she thought so.
So I would share a room with both of them. And so this time I had the room to myself. And I was really, really excited.
Finally, Layla had some quiet and privacy. She closed all the doors, the bedroom main door, the closet door, and the door leading to the ensuite bathroom. She neatly laid out her clothes on the steps of the bunk bed and took the queen bed all for herself.
I remember waking up the next day and all the doors are open. And then when I like stand up, you know, start my day, I see that everything that I put on the bunk bed was like spread out. Like if someone like grabbed my stuff and just like threw it everywhere. And so I got upset because I thought it was like when my parents, like they came in or they're looking for something. And I was like 13 or 14 at the time. So I remember I walked into the bathroom and the mirrors were open and everything that was inside the cabinet was falling on the sink.
Layla was equal parts terrified and enraged. Her bedroom and bathroom were a state, stuff everywhere. She asked her parents what they had been looking for and why they left her room in such a mess. But they both denied going into the room. And come to think of it, Layla hadn't heard anyone enter or create the mayhem that surrounded her. But Layla's mom did have a theory.
She says like, oh, I think it's Steve bothering you because you're by yourself now. Then secondly, I'm like, there's no way that I am going to close all the doors or even have my clothes, you know, put in that bunk bed like I did the night before. You know how sometimes when we go to sleep, we kind of curl up into like a C shape. I remember that I was trying to go to sleep. I was facing the window in this little C shape. I remember like falling asleep and I felt something was staring at me, piercing, like just like I didn't really feel it. And I remember my heart racing like so hard. And at one point it got so uncomfortable that I was like, I need to open my eyes because maybe I'm just like psyching myself out. Like maybe there is nothing there. And so I remember opening my eyes and seeing this little boy crisscross applesauce in the space where I was in that C space. He was right next to me, staring at me. And I remember basically just grabbed my two hands. I like punched the air, grabbed my sheets, put it on top of my head. And I was like shaking. I was breathing so hard. My heart felt like I was going to have a heart attack. I couldn't scream. I had like no voice, nothing. And I remember just forcing myself to go to sleep.
The next day, Layla told her mother about the little boy sitting on her bed. Stunned, her mom revealed to her that that was the same thing she had been seeing standing next to her bed, watching her sleep.
Third night, I was like, there's no way I'm facing the window because there's no way. And so I put a bunch of pillows where, you know, he was sitting down. And I was watching like kid cartoons because I was like, I need anything that could take my mind off anything scary. And so I didn't go to sleep and I hear that there's some noise in the kitchen. And I'm thinking it's my dad because he gets hungry in the nighttime. So I'm like, no biggie, it's just my dad. But then I was like, I wanted to see my dad, you know, go through the hallway. And I remember facing the door and like closing my eyes. And I hear shuffling in the kitchen. And then all of a sudden I hear running, like just like tap, 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 tap. And it went from the kitchen down the hall and right next to me. And when it stopped right next to me, all I heard was, and then it ended.
Layla was so horrified, she blacked out in fear. She has zero recollection of what happened to her after she heard the breathing next to her.
The weekend came around and I invited my friends to have a sleepover at my house. instead of having all my best friends at the time in my room, I was like, let's just have a sleepover in the living room because I didn't want anything scary to happen.
Layla was confident that with her girlfriends over and her sisters back from their trip and asleep in their room, this would be a Steve-free evening.
We brought out the queen mattress into the living room. And it was three of us girls in the queen mattress and then two of the other girls in the two couches that I had. It was like 2 a.m. and my little sister kept on going down the hall and, you know, standing right by where the living room starts. She would just like watch us to see if we were awake because she wasn't tired. And so I remember my best friend at the time, she was like, hey, your little sister's right there. Tired to go to bed because we were like just being like teenage girls and gossiping about boys. I tell my little sister, I'm like, hey, you need to go to sleep. It's really late. If you do this one more time, because she did it multiple times. I was like, if you do this one more time, I'm going to have to wake up my mom. And she's like, okay. And so she goes back to the room. And it was like 15 minutes later. And this time it was like almost around 3 o'clock now. And my best friend goes, hey, she's back. And so I look and I could see, because it was really dark. We didn't have the lights on or anything. And I could see her shadow. I'm like, that's it. I'm going to tell my mom. So I go down the hallway and I go into my sister's room to like scold her basically. And she was dead asleep. She was dead asleep. And she's not a good, you know, person to fake her sleep. She was also like 5 years old. So I remember like trying to wake her up like, honey, it's not funny. It's not funny. Like, don't do that again. But she was in deep sleep. So I go back to the living room. My friend's like, oh, okay, did you take care of it? Like, she's not going to come back out. And I'm like, no, she isn't.
Understandably, Layla did not want to tell her friends that the child that had been watching them was definitely not her sister.
And I knew that if I told them that they were going to call their parents and tell them to pick them up, it didn't matter what time it was.
It was apparent to Layla's parents that the activity was in fact intensifying. And maybe it was time for some help.
Because the things, you know, started escalating and we started seeing him more, my parents would make me go to church every Sunday. Like we would all go to church on Sunday. And we decided to tell the priest what was going on in the house. So we invited him to dinner at our house and he came and we told him everything that was going on and he was like, oh, you know, doesn't sound too good. I have to bless the house. So he blessed our house and he gave us like a bottle of holy water. And he says, you have to mop your floors with holy water at least once a week because this energy is taking too much of your energy and it's keeping you up and, you know, you're restless basically.
As strange as this request was, the family eagerly agreed to give it a go. They were willing to try anything at this point.
But I remember that the first week of us, you know, doing the whole holy water mopping, I took a nap. And I remember waking up and like talking to my dad. And my dad was like, what's wrong with your shirt? You broke your shirt? And I was like, what? And thankfully, you know, I had a bra on, but I remember like looking down and my shirt was ripped. Like my whole shirt was ripped. Like it was like a square almost. And there's no way that I could rip my shirt while I'm napping.
This really was a step too far. Layla began mopping the floors with holy water every other day. She prayed constantly and turned to the church for support.
After we mopped the floors for a month with the holy water, things stopped happening. Basically, completely. It was really shocking because it's been happening for so long, like so many years back to back, that, you know, with this holy water, it really just like stopped.
Shockingly, as soon as the activity began, it had stopped. No more missing items, no more being watched while they slept, no more physical attacks, and no more Steve. There had been a seismic shift that had come over the whole family. Quiet and peace befell the home.
In 2021, so very recently, I went to Ecuador for the first time after 14 years. And my girl cousin, she's my age, she was telling me how one day she was really sad and she didn't know what she was doing with her life. And she asked God for help. And the next day after she asked God for some guidance, her aunt invites her to go to this church where there's a special speaker that is known to like heal people and to like pray for people. And so the special guest says, who wants me to pray for them? So my cousin stood up and she went up to her. At the time, my cousin wanted to be a model. That's why she was asking God for guidance to see what she should be doing. So when she was in line to see the speaker and she finally gets to her, the lady gives her a really tight hug. And my cousin describes it as a hug that like she's never felt before. Because she felt like it was something out of this world, basically. And the speaker like tells her in her ear, like, modeling isn't for you. You have to use your voice. You have a beautiful voice that can impact a lot of people. And then the lady touches her forehead and my cousin faints. As she's telling me the story, I am uncontrollably sobbing. Like, I cannot stop bawling. I remember like hearing the story and being like, wow, this is, you know, crazy. But there's no reason that I should be crying, you know, so hard toward what she's telling me. I remember at one point I was crying so hard that I had to like just step away. And I go and I remember feeling like when she was telling me the story, I felt like I was seeing some shadows on my peripheral. And I'm like, oh, you know, I'm just like imagining things. I need to wash my face, you know. I go, I blow my nose, I come back, everything's fine. I feel like someone's following me, but I'm just like, I think I'm just being a little paranoid. And it was also 5 a.m, mind you. We were up all day. So I was like, maybe I'm just tired. I don't know. And my cousin asks if she could pray for all of us. And so she like basically like makes us all go in the circle. We're all holding hands. And I didn't know that my cousin could sing, but she has a beautiful voice. And so she starts praying slash singing. And the first person that she goes up to was me. And she tells me that spirits are all around me and that I'm safe and those are my angels. She's just saying like a bunch of nice things. And I remember just like, I couldn't stop crying again. I just, you know, kept on crying. And it felt like I was having almost like an anxiety attack, but without the anxiety.
The whole evening had been strange on so many levels, but Layla was sure that after a good night's sleep, things would look different in the morning. But things only continued to befuddle her the next day.
I go take a shower and I have a lot of rings. I wear 7 rings, which is a lot. And I take them off to go to the shower. And so I put them on the sink and I have one specific ring that I wear on like my ring finger. I remember thinking, oh, imagine if I grab my rings, my favorite ring is not there. But I'm like, oh, I'm so funny. Like, I'm just intrusive thought that came into my brain that I just thought. And I was like, okay. Usually, what I always do after I take a shower is just put them right back on. But this time I was like, you know, I'm not going to be doing anything today. I'm just going to leave them on my bed. And I wasn't sharing the room with anybody. So I was smart. And I was playing cards with my cousins at this point. And I remember it like something was telling me, like, go grab your rings. Go put them on. So I go into the room. I grab my rings and I'm putting all of them on. And my favorite ring is not there. It's just not there. So I'm like, oh my God, what? Did I just manifest this happening to me? Like, what did I just do? You know, like, are my thoughts that powerful that I really just did that? I remember going to the bathroom and trying to find it because I was like, maybe it fell. Like, maybe, you know, it's behind the sink or something. And it was not there. And then I asked my little cousins. And I was like, did you guys go into my room? And everybody was like, no, nobody went into your room. I was like, okay. I mean, that's what I figured because I was facing the room. And I remember I was crying because of my ring. And then my grandma, she hired someone to clean her whole house, like to rearrange everything and clean it and see if they could find the ring. And so she did that and they didn't find anything.
The ring was totally gone. It was time to leave Ecuador. And it was clear that the ring would not be coming home with Layla.
So I had AirPods to go into the, you know, for the flight. And I didn't use them at all throughout my Ecuador trip because I was like, what if I lose them in Ecuador? I just don't want to touch them at all. I opened my AirPod case and my right AirPod is missing. And I'm like, what? Like, I haven't used the AirPods at all. How am I missing one of them?
Layla now had to call her grandparents and ask for them to keep an eye out for her AirPod as well as her ring. Was this an irritating coincidence or a former roadblock resurfacing?
And I remember going back home and like arriving at the house, and I had to work the next day. And I looked for my AirPods everywhere when I got to Miami, and they were nowhere to be found. I always do this thing when I go to work that I put things in my pockets. One of them always being my AirPods, like the AirPod case. And I always would wear one AirPod. And so this time I was wearing my left AirPod because it's the only one that I had. And it was like around 2 in the morning. I got off work at 11:30. My friends took me out to eat some tacos. And I was on my way home, and I was telling my friends this story about how I lost my AirPods and my favorite ring. I remember having my AirPod on, and I remember touching my pockets to see if I had the AirPod case on me so I can put that AirPod in the AirPod case. And I feel like there's a little AirPod on my right pocket. And I'm like, that's weird. So I grab the AirPod, and it's my right AirPod. And I'm like, what? I didn't bring these pants to Ecuador, so there's no way that I, you know, could have possibly put them in the pants. And two, I know for a fact that while I was at work, there was nothing in my pockets because I emptied them out. And then the next day, my grandpa calls me and he's like, hey, I found your ring. And I'm like, oh, great. Where was it? And he was like, it was in back of like my drawer that he had next to his bed. And I was like, what? I was like, I didn't even step foot in your room. Things haven't happened to me like that in years after I mopped the floor with holy water and after my house got blessed. So then I have this experience with my cousin that wouldn't make me stop crying. And then everything's happening once again.
Layla instantly began to wonder if that emotional night with her cousin may have unlocked or awoken some kind of spiritual connection that had been laying dormant for years. Layla did not want to go back down this road with Steve. She needed to set some boundaries. She told him, this needed to be the end of their journey. She was not inviting him back into her life. So, what's going on here? Was Steve a spirit that initially was mistaken as an imaginary friend? Was he a poltergeist attached to the family? Or could he have been something darker, like a lower-level demonic entity? I find it interesting that once a priest was involved and a holy water ritual was established, the activity subsided. And it was only after another spiritual interaction that the activity began once more. To me, this sounds like classic poltergeist activity. Poltergeists typically latch onto one particular person or family as opposed to a location. They are known to move, destroy, or make items disappear. They tend to poke, pinch, push, or bite victims. They can cause loud noises or eerie sounds like breathing or voices. They are creatures of disturbance and torment their victims and make them question their own experiences. Their activity can be sneaky and escalate as time goes on. However, they have been traditionally responsive to home blessings and religious intervention, exactly like what happened with Layla's family. Conversely, perhaps Steve was just a lonely little boy looking for love and attention. Regardless, Layla was right to set strong paranormal boundaries as soon as the signs began again. Since then, there has not been any more Steve occurrences. And long may that continue. Do you have a spooky story you'd like to share? I'd love to hear it. Drop me an email at thewestlondonwitch@gmail.com. Or find us on Instagram and Facebook at The West London Witch. If you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. And come and follow us for additional content on Instagram and Facebook. Until next time, merry meet, merry part, and merry meet again. The West London Witch is created by me, Rebecca Strazina. Our sound designer and production magician is the incredible Danny Cross. Our theme music
was bespokely written and performed by the wickedly talented Kyle Hall. Our cover art is the beautiful collaboration between Lizzie Wilson and Jake Bowser. Special thanks to Miss Sinead Bowers, our quality control and biggest cheerleader. And thank you to you, all of our listeners all over the world. These are your stories. Thank you for sharing them with us.